The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Sonia Usech-Kuhn of the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to another edition of Community Connections. Every month, we'll introduce you to people in the community who are making a difference. Our guest today is Niccolo Muti. So let me tell you a little bit about this wonderful and talented man. In his young career, Niccolo has already established himself as a versatile artist. He is the founder and artistic director of Incontri Musicali, an annual chamber music festival that brings classical music's most promising young talents to Spoleto, Italy, for 3 weeks of chamber music performances each summer. He is also the assistant conductor and executive director of the Chamber Orchestra of the Triangle in Durham, North Carolina. As a violinist, Niccolo has performed in recitals across the United States and Europe. He received his bachelor's degree in violin performance from Indiana University, where he studied with Mimi Zweig. He completed his master's degree at Rice University, where he was awarded the Vicki West Prize to study with Kathleen Winkler. Having completed two-year residence at the University of Texas at Austin as a member of the Cordova Quartet, Niccolo is now pursuing a master's degree in conducting at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign with Donald Schleicher. An accomplished former ballet dancer, Niccolo enjoys all forms of dance. He can also be found venting his frustrations on the tennis court and cheering for his favorite soccer team, Juventus, and spending time in the kitchen with a good glass of wine. I'm not sure if he does the cooking as well. We might find out. Here's a little bit more about him and the Chamber Orchestra of the Triangle. Niccolo was born in Durham, North Carolina, to two musicians. His mother is a flute player and his father a pianist and conductor. He is about as old as the Chamber Orchestra of the Triangle and has been around the orchestra since the day he was born. His love for the theater and all its facets began before he could play in the orchestra, when his parents would let him loose in the hall during rehearsals and concerts. Whether it was interacting with patrons or stagehands or climbing into the rafters of the theater, he was able to explore for himself how everything came together to make that magical concert experience. At age 14, his dad stuck him in the back of the second violins. The rest is history. Niccolo is single and lives in Durham, although he's spending the summer in Charleston, South Carolina, where we are speaking with him remotely today. Welcome to Community Connections. We are so pleased to have such an accomplished musician conductor with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Sonia. It's a real pleasure.
So you have studied with some very impressive professors. You were 14 when your father stuck you in the back of the second violins. Was this a factor in what influenced you to study violin? Or did you take one of Mimi Zweig's pre-college string programs?
Music, as you heard from that wonderful introduction, has been a part of my life from the beginning. I started playing the violin when I was 4 years old. I actually was taking lessons with the concertmaster at the time of the chamber orchestra, a wonderful woman by the name of Claudia Warburg. And I grew up playing the instrument and hearing the orchestra. And when I was 12, I was 12 years old that I was sent off to Indiana's String Academy. It's a one-month-long summer intensive for string players ages 12 to 18 in Bloomington, Indiana. And that was really the first time that I saw students at a really high caliber at my age. And that was very, very inspiring. And it was around that same time, maybe a couple years later, I had made, a lot of progress on the instrument that Dad said that it was ready to throw me in the back of the orchestra.
So how did you feel in the back? Did you get special privilege?
At the time, it was pretty intimidating because, you know, here I was with some wonderful musicians, who were professionals. And it was definitely a level of playing that I aspired to be at. And, you know, it's one of those situations where you learn very quickly. You adapt and you progress incredibly quickly when the bar is set so high. So it was a wonderful experience.
Okay. And did you ever take one of those pre-college string programs from your teacher, Mimi Zweig?
I did. I spent 4 summers in Bloomington, Indiana, from the ages of 12 to 15.
Oh, so what was that like?
I mean, that was really life altering, because suddenly I was around students who were my same age, who were aspiring to the same things, to be musicians, and who were willing to work very, very hard to be musicians. And so it really opened my eyes, and these were young, talented string players from all over the world. So it was really life-changing.
So it was a great privilege to be a part of that program.
Incredibly great privilege.
Have you stayed in touch with any of your fellow students?
Absolutely. It's incredible now to see where everybody has landed. Actually, with the it's funny that you mentioned that, because one of the first people I met at the String Academy when I was 12 years old is a wonderful violinist and a wonderful person by the name of Emma Steele. And she is now the concertmaster, so the leader, the first violin of the Danish Royal Opera in Copenhagen. And we see each other about once a year to play together in Italy. So, it's been really wonderful to see, how it all connects now 15, 20 years later.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Music just is a healer. No doubt about it. You have just the slightest little accent.
Uh-huh.
Were you born in Durham or Italy?
I was born in Durham. I think sometimes, and I try not to do this because sometimes it comes across as an affect, but I think it sneaks in. I'm bilingual. My father is from Italy. And so sometimes, the vowels might sound a little different, but it's not done on purpose. I can assure you that.
Well, what I'm sure of, as a woman, that women like the accent. It is so charming. And I bet you get away with a lot. So let's go on with this. You have been awarded many degrees, and now you're studying for another master's in conducting. So tell us how it is playing in the orchestra compared with conducting the orchestra.
Absolutely.
What is the difference?
It's where to start with that. The orchestra is an incredible organism, because a symphonic orchestra close to 100 members. What you're doing essentially is you're taking these disparate voices, the different instruments, the different members of the ensemble, and you're trying to bring them together to form a uniform idea, which, in a piece of music, in interpreting a piece of music. And so as a violinist in the orchestra, you have the task, first of all, of needing to know your part very well. And how it fits, I guess, within the bigger picture. But really the important thing is that you execute your one specific part, very, very well. So that, when when it's time for everything to come together, that, you know, you are, I guess, to a certain extent, to say not the weak link, but that you're, you know, really providing what the composer asked for. And yes, you're interacting with your stand partner, and you are looking at the conductor and listening around you as much as you can, but really you're having to focus on playing your instrument. As a conductor, it's a bit different experience, and it's somewhat difficult to explain, in that, you know, conductors, we don't really have, the orchestra is our instrument. And so without the orchestra, we really don't have anything to play. Most conductors are, you know, do play an instrument themselves, but when you're on the podium, suddenly you're in charge of this enormous organism, and you have to have really, your job is multifaceted. You are have to be very aware of the score, of what the music, of what is happening musically, and all the parts and how they fit together. At the same time, you are have to be aware of the individuals in the ensemble. So there's a psychological aspect to what you're doing. You know, each instrument is very different, and the difficulties of playing them are different. And then, of course, each person in the orchestra has their own personality and a way that they work. So there's a lot going on, a lot more than just, you know, the waving of a stick, as one might think.
Right. It's not just the baton.
It's not just the baton. The baton actually is probably the 1% of the job.
Yes. Yes. Well, I played the viola in sixth grade, maybe seventh grade. That was quite a while ago. So I have the slightest notion of what you are talking about, because our conductor, Mr. Melello, probably not with us on earth anymore, had that task of teaching us how to play our instruments and then conducting us in, you know, the spring concert. It was a long time ago. So tell me something. Are you the first violinist in the orchestra? Yeah.
I am not. You know, I've had the privilege of playing in that seat several times. When I do play in the orchestra, I usually sit in the first violins, but not as concertmaster. We actually have a wonderful concertmaster named Jonathan Ong at the moment, who is a member of the Verona String Quartet, who is our string quartet in residence.
That is fantastic. You are surrounded by absolutely wonderful atmosphere. So it says in your bio that you were a former ballet dancer. When did you have time to study that? And you've also been involved in theater. So tell me about the ballet and the theater.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the ballet is actually a funny story. When growing up, I went to a private school. I was born in Durham, but I went to a private school in Raleigh, because my mother worked there. She worked in the fine arts. At the end of the day, and so she did fine for me to do in and around school, before we could drive, you know, at the time, 45 minutes all the way back to Durham. And when I was about 4 years old, a wonderful lady by the name of Sandra Zellinger started a ballet program in the wrestling room at the school. And I remember my mother, who really had no idea, my parents had no idea about dance, said, well, you know, it's something for him to do. Let's try it out. And that was the beginning of my dance career. And I started at 4 years old and studied until I was 14. And to be honest, Sonia, it was really what I wanted to do when I grew up. I really, ballet was really a passion for me, and movement. And of course, it incorporates music very much. So that's my ballet story. And At the same time, as I got older, I discovered that I liked to sing as well as dance, and so, I participated a lot in the school musicals and plays.
But you settled on the violin. So was there influence from your family?
I would say there was a tad bit of influence. I think when it comes to the arts, there are a lot of realities that you have to face. When we were talking about dance, the life of a dancer is a somewhat short-lived when it comes to performance, unless you're very, very lucky. So that was a reality that I had to face at a very young age that mm-hmm. my parents, discussed with me. And there was actually a crucial moment in my life when we moved from North Carolina to Charleston, South Carolina at the beginning of high school. And at the time, violin was one of the many things that I was doing. But when I started studying in Charleston, I had a teacher who really, sat me down and said, if you want to do this, you need to take it seriously. And this is how you're going to have to go about doing things from now on. And that really is when it started for me. About around the age of 14 is when I really started studying the violin very seriously. And I knew that I wanted to make a career out of music.
And you have to practice a lot. How many hours a day did you practice then? And do you do the same amount now?
So, when I was young, I was probably studying, when I first started, I was probably practicing half an hour to an hour a day, which was very, very important, when you're first starting out. But when I was a teenager and really starting to take the instrument seriously, I would say I was practicing 4 to 5 hours a day.
Mm. That's a lot.
Then when I made it to university, then I probably had the instrument in my hands between personal practice and ensembles that I was playing in, whether it was orchestra or chamber music, I probably had the instrument in my hand for 10 hours a day.
Wow. So a few moments ago, you mentioned the word passion. Other guests have mentioned the word passion. It seems a necessary ingredient for success, whether it's in business, whether you are a teacher or a performer. How does that word passion fit into your profession? Can you expand a little bit on this idea, please?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that passion in music is essential for the simple reason that, you go into music not really for the, first of all, you don't go into music for monetary reasons as a profession. You don't go in thinking, oh, well, I'm going to make a lot of money and have a very comfortable life. That's one thing. But I think, at the end of the day, we make music so that we can move both ourselves and other people and our audience, if we're lucky enough to have an audience. We play music so that we really can move people, make people feel something. And I'm a strong believer that, if you want people to feel something, you have to feel something as well. It doesn't necessarily need to be the same thing. I think that's the beauty of music, is that, you can play a work and feel something, and someone else will feel something completely different. But what's important is that you really do have that passion for the music and for what you're doing, because that's what essentially comes across when you perform.
I completely agree. Passion is a very important part of anything that you do, because if you love it, you will do it well.
Absolutely.
So now let's go to Italy. Tell our listeners, I've been, and I would go back in a heartbeat. Please tell our listeners how you created Incontri Musicali. It sounds like musical encounter. Is that what it means?
You're absolutely correct. it does mean musical encounter. The genesis of the festival really just comes from the idea of having people come together from different parts of the world to share their talents and play music. The festival started about 10 years ago and started with 5 musicians, where we gave 3 concerts over the course of 3 weeks, so 1 concert a week. And now it's grown to where we give 8 concerts in 3-week times, and we have 10 musicians coming from several different continents.
Did you have it already this summer?
So this summer we actually unfortunately had to cancel due to the coronavirus.
Yes.
But we will hopefully be doing something around New Year's.
Okay. Let's hope. Let's hope we have a vaccine. So,
Let's hope.
Your parents are a part of the Spoleto Festival, or are they audience when they're in Italy?
So, at the moment, they're audience. So, Dad actually has a very strong connection to the festival. He, being from Spoleto, of course, that's where the festival takes place. But his mentor for a very, very long time was actually the founder of the festival, Giancarlo Menotti, a fantastic composer and the man who really began both the festival in Spoleto and in Charleston, South Carolina. And so Dad has performed for the festival, conducted for the festival several times over the years. But at the moment, we are not involved as a family.
I see. Well, I'm guessing that they canceled the Spoleto Festival this summer as well, because almost everything has been canceled. But I have attended the Spoleto Festival in Charleston. I was there mm-hmm. 2 different seasons. I loved the young musicians' performances. They were fabulous. So how is that different from the one that takes place in Italy as compared to the one that takes place in Charleston, South Carolina? And are you part of the festival in South Carolina?
So the 2 festivals, it's actually an interesting story, which one could speak about at length. But the short version is that the split is a festival. Like I mentioned before, it was started by American composer by the name of Giancarlo Menotti, was incredibly successful. And when he started it and he grew it and it involved young artists from all over the world, at some point he decided that he wanted to expand the experience and to repeat it in a different part of the world. And that's when he formed a second festival in Charleston, South Carolina. And so the original name of the festival actually was the Festival of 2 Worlds, where for 3 weeks the festival would take place in Charleston, and then it would migrate to Spoleto, Italy. Then at some point, as I mentioned, it's a long story, the 2 festivals decided to split. And so Spoleto Festival, that's how Spoleto Festival USA was born in Charleston, which now is completely separate from the Spoleto Festival in Italy, which does its own thing. In terms of my participation, I have participated minor roles in both festivals.
I see. Okay. Well, that's quite an accomplishment. You're having organized your friends to do this, and your mom's expertise in organization helping you. And it seems that they're both successful here and there. But I would love to go to Spoleto in Italy. That would be fantastic.
Absolutely.
All right. So here is my signature 3-part question. I ask all the guests 3 parts, okay?
Okay.
Where in Europe have you performed? Who is your favorite composer? And what about that artist's music moves you?
Mm.
That might be a hard one. because you've got to be familiar with many composers.
So, where in Europe have I performed? That was the first question. I've been lucky to perform in a lot of places. I think probably my most recent. So my most recent performance was actually in Copenhagen, in Denmark, which was a wonderful experience. It was my first time in Copenhagen, a beautiful city. And so that was my latest European adventure. My favorite composer. So unfortunately, this is going to sound, my favorite composer has to be Mozart. I'm a big fan of opera. And I think that, some of the greatest operatic works that have ever been written were written by Mozart. I think, the beauty of Mozart's music, is that it's really able to tell a story, whether you're listening to one of his operas or one of his concerti or his symphonies, you can hear the different voices, you can hear the different characters of the story. And I think that it's an incredibly powerful tool that he mastered and that allows people to connect with his music.
Okay, we're coming down to just about a minute and a half left. The coronavirus impacted everything and the Chamber Orchestra of the Triangle, and our listeners who are blind and print impaired certainly could benefit from music. You just have to lean back and hear it. You don't have to see it. So what is the Chamber Orchestra of the Triangle doing about entertaining people again? And how can our listeners take part of the music?
Absolutely. So, like you said, COVID has kind of made things difficult for us to perform for a live audience. But our plan as of now is to produce our concerts this season, even though we might not have a live audience.
Okay. So is there some website or something that you could tell us quickly?
Yeah, the website is www.thecot.org.
Fantastic. Well, Niccolo, you have really been a charming guest. Thank you so much for being with us today. And we will be sure to let our listeners know about the website so that they can enjoy the fantastic music. We've run out of time for this month's episode of Community Connections. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. I'm Sonia Usach-Kuhn for the North Carolina Reading Service. Community Connections is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments, questions, or would like to be a sponsor of Community Connections, please call 919-832-5138. The number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to North Carolina Reading Service.